Welcome to KSL Cafecito, the podcast where we talk all things culture over some nice cafecito. I'm Yvette Cruz.
And I'm Joel Caranas.
And this is our last episode of the year, or the decade, I should say.
Yeah, wow.
Which is actually what we're talking about today. The 2010s, the end of a decade, and what a decade it has been.
It's been one. It's been an interesting one.
Yeah. So in this episode, we're looking back at the 2010s, the things that changed our everyday life, the trends that shaped us, and just how we live today compared to at the beginning of the decade. Obviously, a lot has happened in the last 10 years, and I doubt that we'll be able to hit every single big thing all in this episode, but we're going to try. Now, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've been reflecting about the decade and just trying to come up with all these defining moments. But like I said, it's going to be really difficult to hit them all. So I'm certain that we're going to leave some stuff out. So if I do, please feel free to at me on Twitter. Just kidding. Don't.
No.
It's
tough. No, it really is tough. Like I've been, when the idea to do this episode, when we first thought of it, like it's, how do you encompass basically so many things? And not just, I think we focus a lot of times nationally, but also internationally, because it's not just the U.S. It's not just things that happen in this, you know, in our country that affects the world.
Yeah.
So it has been tough. So, but we'll try our best.
Yeah. And I think that when you like start to look back, especially like reflecting on a whole decade, you kind of realize how small we really are. Yeah. Because like you obviously know or don't know what happened to you in the last decade. But then you kind of just like see all the stuff that's happening everywhere else and just like how it affected so many other people and how it affected you and how you affected. Like it's just kind of a chain. And yeah, you realize how small we really are. Yeah. So hopefully we hit all these things. I want to start off with the big one. This might be the most obvious one, but technology. Right. Technology changed a lot over the last 10 years. Obviously, technology is always evolving, and so it's probably been changing since the day each of us were born. But I think really in this last decade, it changed the way we live our everyday lives, like the way we interact with technology every single minute of the day and just how reliant we are on it. And the big thing there that stood out to me is obviously our phones, smartphones. Yeah. In the year 2010, obviously we did have smartphones. I think I did not have an iPhone, which is like one of the big smartphones of the times now, but I had a smartphone. Right. And
I think I had a BlackBerry still.
I don't know what I had. I think it was an Android and I don't know what it was called. Right. It was like Android something, like I don't even remember. Right. But like I remember at the time though, when I had like my purse or my backpack with me, I had my phone. I would carry my phone with me. I would also carry a calculator. I would carry probably a notebook. I would carry a digital camera because back then, yeah, we carried digital cameras around like these little, you know, so we could document our everyday life and also post it to social media. But social media wasn't as big. We'll get to that later. But yeah, I remember carrying all this stuff with me, or just like, or at least needing this stuff, or at least like needing to use this stuff every now and then. And I had to have all these different devices. And now it's all in our phones. Yeah. Like it's something that we know, but when you look back at it, it's just kind of crazy to think like, yeah, all like you've seen the pictures where it's like someone takes all these items and puts it around.
Right.
And then all of a sudden someone puts a phone next to it. And it's like this phone, your phone now is all of these things. Like it's your GPS. It's your notepad. It's your connection to the world. It's your calculator. It's your video camera. Right. It's also what you use to call and text people.
Yeah.
But it's just so, it's just crazy that it like happened in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And it's interesting how like I'm thinking back to like 2010, the best that I can, I was still in grad school, so it's all been just a big blur. I remember I would carry I did have my cell phone. I'm pretty sure it was the BlackBerry. I still had that one because I was also carrying my iPod Touch. And that was when the iPod Touch had barely come out. But honestly, I didn't have a Twitter then. I did not have a Twitter account then. It was a year later that I opened up a Twitter account. And looking back on it, like, yeah, I loved the internet, but I wasn't actually checking it on my phone.
Right. You were using a desktop.
I was waiting to go to my desktop or to go to my, go to a computer somewhere in my, whether it's my office or just in school, to go on the internet. But it never dawned on me like, oh, I'm just going to look up on my iPod Touch, or I'm going to look it up even on my BlackBerry. Like to me, it wasn't a priority. Like I'm going to go, I have to get to a computer. I would still say that. I think not many people really say that anymore. Now it's all about now I'm just going to go look it up right now.
Right. Because why would you have to wait? Like it's so immediate that your phone can do everything. And even just that, like I'm thinking, because I forgot that I never had an iPod Touch. I had an iPod, which also I carried around with me in that bag with all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I remember, iPod Touches, you could connect to Wi-Fi, right? And then you could use them. But still, I don't know. I'm sure people were doing it, but it was definitely was not as common as it is now. now to just look something up really quick and just not just like, you know, the Google. Yeah, you're looking up information. But now think of all the apps, like think of how apps take up our everyday life. Like, I mean, people wake up and they probably use an app, whether that's like you're checking social media, you're checking the news, you're, I don't know, meditating, whatever, everything, not everything, but like most things are done through the apps. And the apps, there's not even like a limited amount. Think of all the things that apps can do. And you have so many options. Now I'm thinking like all the other stuff. So like Uber, obviously Uber and like Lyft and rideshare, you can order food. All that stuff is done through your phone. Like I have a DoorDash app. I have a Grubhub.
Pay bills, pay other people, wait for people to pay you back with this.
Yeah, Venmo. You know, like it's such a big part of
it. Even to calm down, like the Calm app, like to help you meditate, to relax.
Yeah,
to read. It really becomes like your personal assistant.
Yeah.
Like really. And it's kind of, if you would have told me 10 years ago, part of me probably could have believed it, but I was just going to know like, okay, how's that all going to come together? And it's been interesting to see these past 10 years, how it all came together. Well, now it's the norm. Now it's just like kind of basic life. But back then it's like, I don't know. It just took a little bit longer to kind of just put all these things together and kind of like, okay, how's this going to be done? Or, and even apps, like I'll admit, like I was not very for apps at the beginning.
Okay.
I was like, do I need a lot of these apps? Like, why? Isn't this taking up memory of my phone? I probably sound like a grouchy old man at the beginning. But then you realize that like, oh man, this is just so convenient. It just makes things so much easier. And then, you know, the good side, obviously, yeah, everything's quicker. The downside, some people might say it's, you know, maybe the person gets lazier, whatever. There's arguments on both sides. But I think for the most part, it's been for the better. But just putting it all together now, some of us can't. I know we say jokingly sometimes, oh, I can't live without this app or I can't live without that. I'm sure we could.
Yeah, we've done it before.
But it helps. But it makes it nice.
You know? Like what you said about the personal assistant. It's funny because, our phones are like our personal assistants, but that we are controlling. Like they don't have minds of their own. We actually have to like have it. You know, we have to set our own alarm and we have to we have to open the map or the app to meditate. Like, you know, it's not doing it. Like it's making things easier, but yeah, it's still us powering it. So it's kind of like a mind game thing where we think we're getting all this help, but really it's like they're just tools helping us get there.
Right.
But yeah, like even in my everyday conversations, when you say something, I've found myself saying to people, oh man, there should be an app for that. Like that's just the solution now. Like it's not like, oh, I should just learn how to do this for myself. No, there should be an app for that. There should be an app to assist me. Yeah, it's so crazy. And I don't know. It's just, technology, I think it was obviously a big one. I think that iPads, yeah.
Like iPads obviously becoming more of the norm.
Right, actually, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I don't have a TV. I watch everything on my iPad.
Right.
Not that I don't, I probably don't want a TV, but it's just to me, like the iPad is just, it's kind of like my mini TV in a sense. And I obviously can use it for other things, but because I'm watching stuff on it, that's what makes my phone so convenient to just be like, I mean, they're at this point, the phones are getting bigger that they're going to be the same size.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I just look things up so easily. Like I don't even think about it. Like, are you ever watching like a movie or listening to something and all of a sudden you're like, where was that from? Like immediately. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can't just sit there and be like, no, I'm going to remember this, until I remember. No, I'm going to I'm starting to look it up already. Like, where is this actor from? What's his IMDb? Like, oh, there it is. That's that movie. And then
I usually do that, but I do that usually after.
Oh, so you try to remember.
Yeah. So when I watched the first time, like The Irishman, like I was like, okay, I know about Jimmy Hoffa and who he was, but let me look up a little bit more. So after it was done, I began, like I used my phone and I began looking more like what exactly everything happened.
Yeah.
I knew he was missing, but like,
right.
Nothing
like, what's the story?
Yeah.
I did the exact same thing, except I did it during the movie because
really?
But obviously I was getting distracted back and forth between the movie. Mm. But yeah, I do that. I don't do it in theaters because of the whole, you don't want to pull your phone out or with the bright light or whatever. But yeah, if I'm at home watching a movie and something is just kind of like, what is this history? Like, yeah, it's so easy to just, you don't have to. And I don't think, 10 years ago, it's not like we were using encyclopedias as much as before. You know, we had technology, but it's just, it was, you could do it from, now you can do it from your couch or in your car or just as you're walking because it's in your pocket. So it's just.
And we become such a society now, or culture now, that we want everything instant, because I think now I was looking at Complex and they did a big list of like end of decade stuff. And one of the things that really transitioned in from 2010 till now is really the elimination of CDs and now making music even more accessible now more than ever. You know, you have things like SoundCloud, you have all these other, websites that have opened up within these last decade, where now music is not something that, you just don't have to go to your Sam Goody or whatever back in the day. I mean, they were fading out in the 2010s, like around 2010, but now obviously they're completely gone and your music, it's there. Now, right. It's now, and you could even post it. You could say, I'm going to go record this, record it, you know, take your hour or however long it takes, and then upload it. And then, you know, 5-10 minutes later, it's out to the world. It's out to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, that used to be a process that would take sometimes even months. It's just crazy to think that how instant now we become, which other people might say, well, that's a bad thing because, you know, we don't have any patience. That's a whole different argument for another day. But it is convenient. I'm not going to lie. I do like having my music there. It's good and it's so important.
Yeah. And then so like with the music, you were talking about all these like SoundCloud, other streaming services, Apple Music, Spotify. I remember I never burned my own CD when CDs were like this really big thing. I would have I would ask other people for help because I know that they did it all the time. And I'd be like, these are the songs that I want. These are the artists or whatever. And then they would, help me out and they would burn the CD for me. I never did it on my own. I didn't have whatever programs they were. Or like sometimes once I downloaded music, I like could put it on a list, but like I don't know if my computer was capable of burning the CD, so I could never do that. But now with all these other things, like I am an Apple Music user, and you can curate a playlist and you can send it to somebody who also has Apple Music, so you don't have to burn CDs anymore. Now you can do that, and it's so convenient. And what you said about it being like, you know, we're not patient anymore, or you know, there's that argument, I think that that could be said. But also I think that because technology has evolved so much, there's still a divide between people who, obviously technology costs money, and there's people who can't afford the highest technology. And I think that includes a lot of us too, because even, you know, where we're at with iPhones or whatever, there's people who have much better technology in their homes, in their cars, all that stuff over us, like regular people. But I think because technology just has gotten so big, and I think it's I'm not saying it's more affordable, but I think it's more accessible to just a lot more people. I think like you don't have to have access to a recording studio to record something now. You don't have to have access to equipment to like record a podcast, or you can do all this stuff through like different like techniques on your phone and different apps. And anybody, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like setting, like it's kind of equalizing things for people. Yeah. Not completely, but I think that now you just see it just seems more accessible. Like even if you go to a library, you can access technology, and maybe if you can't afford it, but you can access it in the library, and you can, you know, still do a bunch of stuff with it. And so I don't know. I think that's probably there's probably way more to that than like that's just the surface. But I think that the nice thing is that at least it's a little bit more accessible now than it was 10 years ago. And so that makes me think that maybe 10 years from now, it'll be even more accessible for people who otherwise wouldn't have an opportunity to you know?
And I think the next thing, like just to kind of play off of what you said about like the accessibility, I think the next thing, hopefully for the next 10 years, will be getting the access to the most fundamental thing that we need for most of us, which is actually internet.
Right.
There was an episode of Hassan's Patriot Act, it was a couple of weeks ago, that talked about how internet access is still, we think, oh, it's anywhere. You can get internet access anywhere. That is actually not the case. There are still plenty of places in this country as well that still have a very difficult time accessing the internet and also making it affordable. So I'm hoping that in the next 10 years, I hope that that becomes something that's, you know, we begin to kind of fade out, because like you said, we have all of this, you know, access to all these websites and all of this technology. But if we don't have the fundamental core, if we don't have access or affordability to it, what's the point of it? You know, so that changes.
That makes a lot of sense. That's something that like, they called it the digital divide a long time ago. And it was the people who have access to internet and people who don't. And I think that that has shifted a little bit, which is what I mean to say, like it's shifted into the sense that now a little, you know, there are more people who can access it the same way. But very good point that there's still this big gap, and unfortunately it still exists, and there's still a lot of people who can't access it, and we just think about it as like such a normal thing now, because a lot of us can just access it on our phone. But you're right, there's a lot of people who can't. So thank you for bringing that up.
No problem.
Shifting to another big thing that kind of changed over the decade was kind of playing off of technology, social media. Can't ignore that
it's everywhere.
So much. And we talk about it a lot, but that's because it's everywhere, like you said. So social media, kind of going back to the technology, it, at least for me in like 2010 or early 2010s, it was mostly accessed through a desktop.
Yeah.
So I had a smartphone at the time, I think, and I maybe had Facebook on it, but it wasn't, it's still like, to me, the better experience was the desktop experience.
Yeah,
and
I agree actually.
So, you know, if you had to upload photos, like I think my phone could take photos, but I wasn't taking a bunch of photos and uploading them.
It's probably slow too at that
exactly.
time.
Exactly. So I was, you know, still using my digital camera. And then, you know, like if I came back after a vacation or something, I would upload these photos on the desktop.
Oh my gosh, I remember
the album.
Those days.
I know I'm not alone
get the
here.
Wire, get
right, exactly. Get
in.
It ready, you know, title the album. Like it was a process. process, and it was done at the desktop. I still remember, the desktop that I did it at, and my mom's house. And so that was the main thing. Like, this is my experience. I think it's different for everybody. I was like 19 going on 20 at the beginning of the decade. And I think Facebook was, for me, it was fairly new at that time. I think I'd been out for a few years then, but I was I had entered college at this time. And so, yeah, it started to become a thing, because before that, I know you guys remember MySpace.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. That was kind of fading out at this point, but I think, it was pretty much fading out at this point, or like sort of faded at this point. So yeah, Facebook was a big one. Twitter I know existed, but I didn't get on it until like 2012. And even then it wasn't like my go-to. I think Instagram was maybe coming out soon. And I think Instagram was a phone. It wasn't like a desktop thing. It was made for the phone. So and I'm sure there's other ones, but these were the main ones. And my big thing is, like, this was all done through a desktop. Like, this wasn't on your phone, and it wasn't the first thing you did when you woke up. Like, now, people are scrolling and checking their notifications because you're getting notifications about whatever. And that's like one of the first things that you do, or just like any free second that you have, because it's, back to technology, it's on your hand, it's on your phone, and which is in your hand and your pocket. But yeah, before, you'd have to wait until you were at a desktop, or like things like internet cafes, like people would check their messages, their Facebook messages, or like
pay $7 an hour.
Right.
If you could buy a burnable CD there.
Exactly. Oh, or even like, even if you weren't paying to go there, like if you were at school, that you would, you would go to the computer lab with the student center, whatever it was. And that's where you would check, at least most of us, that was where the majority of your social media time came from. So that, I think, is one of the biggest things that's changed. Like, social media is, like we say, it's everywhere now, and it's top of mind for a lot of people. Top of mind.
Yeah. Like, it's really become like, I forgot what the old term was back when, like, in Europe, there used to be like you could call it just the common kind of, where people would go out to their plaza or whatever it was called. Like, that's where everybody would go and talk. And obviously doesn't really exist a place like that, like in this country necessarily. But it feels like now our plaza, our area, our common area is social media. That's where everybody goes now, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, I guess kind of a little bit fading to an extent, more Instagram to put in your photos to make a statement there. But yeah, like I thinking back of it, it's like in 2010, I was not focusing on, I hadn't even focused on Twitter. I didn't really know what that was until work told me what it really was, and that I needed it because because you're going to need it. This is how you're going to promote. It's going to help you out with your career, blah, 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 all this stuff. But I never thought that this was going to really become kind of my, at least for a few years, kind of became your life and your career, because it depended so much on what am I hearing? What's going on here?
Right.
And then for a lot of us, even to this day, like obviously even yourself as a social media manager, it's so important. Like And so it's like, and maybe 10 years ago, if somebody were to ask you or tell you, Yvette, you're going to be a social media manager,
and be like, a what?
Like, what is that? Yeah, and it's part of me, like, it's great. I think it is great because obviously more work, it's more ability for people to express themselves. You're going to have your bad apples here or there. That's kind of with anything. But for the most part, I think, it's a platform. You don't have to be somebody, a higher up or anything like that, or somebody, a VIP to have the platform. Everybody has the platform. Obviously, hopefully you're using it for positivity. And, looking back at it and how some things just, even within the past decade, things have changed. Like, obviously, as I mentioned, kind of Facebook has faded a little bit. Instagram was bought by Facebook. So completely changed. Even the algorithms have changed. Snapchat, I was never into Snapchat. I know Snapchat is still around. I know it was bigger a little bit, but basically after Instagram kind of did what they do, they're kind of like,
Yeah, because I think Snapchat was more, it's still a thing, and it's a really big thing for some people still.
Yeah.
I think for me, it like peaked in the mid 2010s. Yeah, I think so. Like,
2010s,
yeah, 2016, 17, I was still using it. I think last year, I guess for me, like last year was when I was kind of just like, and I still have it. I still use it sometimes, but it's just kind of like, compared to the other ones. I was just thinking as you were talking also. So in the beginning, like, when we talked about like when we had Facebook and, Twitter at the beginning of the decade, I don't even know if we use the term social media to call those things were. Like, I don't remember the first time I used the term, but I know that at that time I wasn't like, oh yeah, so what social media app are you on? Or like, it wasn't like that term itself. Maybe it existed and I don't know where it came from, but I don't think I was using, I know I wasn't using it like that.
I don't think I began to use it probably until 2012, probably a year into freelancing is when it's like, oh, there's Instagram and all kinds of social media.
All, like,
but it was my
category.
Job. It was telling me, it was Bleacher Report. It was telling me that social media. I'm like, okay, sure.
Interesting. Like, yeah. I just, yeah, that's something I was just like, oh, I didn't even realize like when that term itself was born. Mm-hmm. I remember social media for connecting people, which I think it still does. And I love that it still does that. I think that like when we talk about like downsides and upsides, I mean, upside is definitely that I have a job because of it. And, you know, me and a lot of other people, and that we can all connect because of it. I do think that over time, social media has made us all more superficial.
Yeah.
Just because that's just what you see. I think it's kind of contagious. And so it's made us like that. Not completely, but it's made everyone like maybe a teensy bit more superficial. But I also think that it's made us all more creative, which I really like. I mean, think about how, we were using desktops mostly, and then we weren't thinking about it the same way. Now you can go live. You can go live wherever you are. You can take people with you on whatever journey you're on. And whether that's a vacation or whether that's like a new project that you're working on or whether that's just like a lazy day. Like, I think it depends on how you're using it and who follows you is interacting with you and if they're into that or not. But I think that it's made us more creative in the sense that I see some really cool stuff on social media. I see people like, I mean, even when you like, you know, when something happens and someone creates a meme like that, I would have never thought about it, but it's hilarious. And I'm like, where's all this creativity? Like, this people are really, really good with it. And I also think that social media, and this is kind of like maybe a double-edged sword, because for some people, it's like obviously opened up the door to more bullying, or for people to be more bullies, because now you're behind a screen and you're not face-to-face. And so, yeah, it opens up a lot of doors. But I also think I have seen a lot of vulnerability as well, where people are just kind of opening up about subjects that are close to them or that are difficult for some people, and they're just sharing their experiences. And so social media, maybe it's like the biggest double-edged sword of all, but I think that there's a lot of good in it too, and I like seeing all the positive stuff. And I actually think that social media is going to get better, probably worse, but better, probably both at the same time, like it is now. So I'm excited to see what is in store for it. I'm nervous because just like look at this last decade. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited. I think that there's going to be a lot of cool stuff. I hope there's not like five more social media apps that we have to like completely get sucked into. Like,
I'm kind of beginning to get apped out in the sense of like, I know which ones to prioritize. Like, there's really, I don't really consider YouTube to be social media necessarily, but I do love my YouTube. But yeah, it's Twitter and Instagram, I guess. Like, Instagram has been really gaining really more traction for me, at least personally, these past few months. But Twitter will always, at least for me, will be king. Facebook, I could see myself in the next decade shutting down my Facebook. Like, there's really no, like, there's no need. Even the relatives that I like only keep in contact via Facebook, I'll just text them or send them a text that like, hey, I'm shutting this down, just because I feel like I just don't need it anymore. I don't feel like it's the way just the algorithm works, the way obviously how instant Twitter can be. I don't feel like I necessarily need that. Just like we faded out with MySpace, some people are now fading out with Snapchat. Mm-hmm. I feel like at some point Facebook will always be around. Don't get me wrong. But I think people are just going to begin to kind of just put it on the shelf.
Okay. So this is kind of like a loaded question, but if you had to, if you had to make one social media prediction for like the next decade, mm-hmm. like let's say there was only one of those apps, like all these apps that we just mentioned, all these social media tools, let's say only one was going to survive. Mm-hmm. So which one do you think it would be like next decade?
Oh, I still think Twitter will it. I think Twitter, because I do like the photos option. Obviously, that's the whole point of Instagram, but you could also put photos on Twitter, and you really can't express yourself verbally as you can. You can do it on Instagram. I mean, obviously you could, take a screenshot of a notes that you did and then, upload it and put it there. But I think Twitter is like Coke. Twitter is like, it's just going to always be around.
Never dies.
No, it's just always going to be there. There could be competitors, but like, is Coca-Cola really going to go away? I'm not talking about Coca-Cola. We're not talking about Coca-Cola, by the way. But I'm just saying, but you know what I mean? It's like, it's not really going to go away. I just think it's going to be there. And I just think it's just more flexible. You could just do more things with it than you really can with Instagram. If Instagram changes some things, then yeah, I could see that happening. But I do like Instagram's formula. Mm-hmm. I hope they keep it as it is. But who knows? What about you? What do you think?
I kind of agree with you. Yeah. Like, I think obviously Facebook has been around for a long time, and Facebook has changed for the good and the bad. And there's also this other stuff attached to it, negative stuff attached to it. And obviously, like, I think Instagram is connected to Facebook, but I do think that Twitter, it may not be the same Twitter, just like Facebook isn't the same Facebook it was at the beginning of the decade. I don't think it'll be the same Twitter, but yeah, I think if anything's going to survive, it's going to be Twitter, because there's a lot of other things attached to it. I think right now it's simple. It's simple, and yes, I know sometimes like there was the whole like character thing, like maybe people want to say more, but like you said, there's ways around that. You could post, you could write it a note, then post a picture. Like people do this all the time. Same with pictures. You can post pictures to it, you can post video to it. Right now it's just like, I like the layout. It's pretty simple. I mean, I have some like qualms with it here and there, but I think that, I mean, who knows? What if like, maybe it will be Twitter, but what if Twitter in a decade looks like Facebook now, but it's Twitter, but it's like sort like it started out as Twitter, but it ends up being Facebook. Like that would just be like the most like circle of life thing, right? Like cycle of life, like, you know, it'd be the craziest thing. But I think Twitter can survive, and also because there's a lot of industries behind it. Like, I mean, obviously we're journalists, and so journalism is Twitter's huge for journalism, right? So I hope that we don't let it die, right? But there's just a lot of other industries that I think can benefit from it.
You're absolutely right. Like I think bigger companies rely more on Twitter, right, than Instagram.
Yeah,
like I feel like some of these, anyone that does promotions, or even if we're going to use these big companies, I already said Coca-Cola, I'm sure them and some of these other ones, McDonald's, whoever you want to throw in there, rely more on Twitter than, okay, let's post a photo of our french fries on Instagram. Mm. You know, not there's anything wrong with that. I do love my french fries. And Twitter. I know you're a fan of french fries too.
Yeah, I do.
But yeah, I just feel like it's more versatile.
I was just going to say, like, what if, you know how you have like Facebook stories, Instagram stories, and then that's all based off Snapchat? What if that's what Twitter is like in the tech? No. We have Twitter stories now. I mean, you know, honestly, like, if I got to choose one thing, I would love one app that does that, like, lets me do different things in a I'm gonna take that back because I kind of got that once and I did not ask for it, so never mind. Anyway,
I did want to bring up something also when it comes to sort of culturally what has happened, since we are a cultural podcast, of course. Obviously in these past, well, you could really say what the past, it was been 2 years, 3 years, one of the biggest movements, or one of the biggest cultural moments of this decade, has been the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. And just the changes that have been, you know, long changes that should have been made long ago have now finally are beginning to, I say beginning because there's still a long way to go. I don't want to say, oh, it's done, we've already passed sexism or whatever, et cetera. Like, I don't want to say that. There's still a long way to go. But I wanted to get your perspective as a woman. What has this past, I guess, not even necessarily just this decade, that's this past the Me Too movement of, I'm going to say, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. What have you seen that has changed from then or before, like 2010 until this movement here, that you would say, like, you know, you're grateful for? Because obviously we've seen powerful men finally be called out for what they are and, you know, taken down. We've finally seen more women be recognized for, you know, what they've always been. There's still, as mentioned, there's still a couple of things that need to be done. I should say more than a couple of things. There's a long way to go. But I feel like it's been something that's, you know, for me, could have happened in the 2000s, for example. I don't know. I don't know. I think social media played a big part in it, obviously, as well.
I agree. I think that's, so to answer your question, I think one of the biggest things that I've seen that I've really liked is that it's given the opportunity, like the movement has given people the opportunity to take their power back. And I think that social media did play a big role in that, because it spread the word. It helped people, and there's still people who may not want to share their stories, who may not be ready, and I think that's fine. I think if and when they're ready, they will. But for other people who needed, like, maybe who needed that small push, or just kind of like needed to know that they weren't alone, social media opened up the door for all those people to know that, hey, like there's a movement going on. We're not going to stand this. If you want to join it, join it. And you don't have to, like, in the way that you could join it, I mean, you're not joining it just by sharing your story. You could also back the movement and talk about the movement and like support the movement. And a lot of that was done through social media. So I think that that's one of the biggest things. I think that, yeah, it gave people a chance to speak up. It gave people a voice. There's a lot of people who, you know, we talk about how, well, I don't know if we talked about this a lot on the podcast, but the U.S. is a complicated country, and it's, you know, people call it a free country, and it is a free country in a sense. And, you know, we do have rights where people can speak up about things. But there's always, like, there's usually a catch, and it's not as free as we'd like to say. And I don't want to get into a lot here, but I think that social media opened up the door. And I think this movement opened up the door for people to, like, be able to connect to each, you know, to this movement and to people who maybe were higher up the totem pole, I guess you could say, who had more power or had more of a voice. I think sometimes people think celebrities have more of a voice, and maybe that's true depending on who the celebrity is or who you think you are. But social media kind of evened it out for a lot of people. And right. I think that it just kind of helped. And I think the more you saw it, like, maybe it was on social media a lot because of, you know, it was a hashtag Me Too. So that's why, that's why I keep going back to social media. But also, like, even between people, like, people were obviously, like, journalists were writing about it and they were, like, helping people tell their stories, but also people just within themselves maybe opened up to their circles, their friends and their family, and connected people more. And so I think that that was a very big defining moment of the decade, was the whole Me Too movement. And I don't think it's going to die in the 2010s. I think it's going to continue. And I think there's going to be other movements coming off around it. So yeah, maybe it was needed in the 2000s. I mean, it was needed in the 2000s, and it's probably been needed since the beginning of time. But yeah. I mean, societies evolve, like technologies evolve, the cultural trends evolve. And I think that better late than never. Yeah. So I will say that that was, I guess that's one of those better late than never things, probably one of the big ones right now. Some other like current events type, like cultural stuff that kind of happened over the decade, which very unfortunate. There were a lot of mass shootings.
Yeah.
I mean, there have always been mass shootings. I mean, there's always been a lot of like violence and things going on in the world, but it seems like this decade, and I mean, I've been around for about 3 decades, and so I can't speak to a lot. I don't have a ton of experience, but in this last decade, I remember a lot of violent episodes, like a lot of mass shootings. I just remember a part of it is also because, you know, that's when I started my career in news. But yeah, over and over and over and over and over. And then, you know, we've talked about this before, where like maybe in the last year, it's felt like it's a lot. But like, think about the entire decade where people now fear going to movie theaters and now fear going to malls and going to school as a child or as a college student. And so that was something that I think, unfortunately, really stood out for me this decade.
Yeah. And it's something that, you know, for better or for worse, Americans are, because this is, I mean, mass shootings happen all around the world, but it happens a lot more here in this country, obviously. Americans, for better or for worse, are adaptable. And unfortunately, we've become very adaptable in the fact that school shootings and shootings in general, mass shootings in general, I should say, are the norm. And we kind of now, I mean, it used to be, I could still remember back in 99, because I was entering high school when Columbine happened and when these other ones were beginning to happen in the 2000s. Like, this was big breaking news that would come in and, you know, it would interrupt whatever programming. Now it's kind of, some of it does, but sometimes it's just like, oh, there was a shooting here, you know, so 3 people dead or 4 people dead. It's almost become the norm, and that's unfortunate. And we should never, don't think that. That's just my personal opinion. All right. That's what, please, for anybody that thinks that this is just, well, it is what it is. And this is just our country, how it is nowadays. It doesn't have to be. Nobody's saying it has to be. You know, there's still, I know there, it's a tricky subject. I know it's something that is going to take a lot of work politically. It takes a lot of work, you know, socially. I do believe we can get there at some point, but it's a long road ahead. And I get that. But my personal opinion, do not make it just be, it's just the norm. This is not the norm. This shouldn't be the norm where we just now, because I see it, at least, I guess personally, I see some of the people that I know just kind of, they brush it off, not because they just think it's nothing. I mean, obviously, people have been killed. That is something, but it's just become so frequent that now it's just like, can we always, you know, become horrified when we see it? When we see it every other day or every 3 days or every week or even once a month is too much. But I don't know. It's one of the sad parts of this past decade.
Right. Another one would be, and then I guess we'll like lighten it up after this, but another one would be that, and again, like I haven't been around for a long time. So this is just like in my recent memory. And also this last decade was like the oldest I've been obviously in my life. So I feel like I just remember it more because I was like an adult most of this decade. Well, for the entire decade compared to other parts of the other 2 decades in my life. But this decade, it seemed like there was like the political divide got even bigger. Yeah. And there was a lot more polarization going on and just a lot more debate and a lot of anger and hate. And that just sucked.
Yeah.
Like that. And I think all these other things contribute to it, because also technology contributed to it, because you got to see this stuff more, and then social media contributed to it, because you had there's where you had your voice and you got to talk about the hate that you have inside you against other people who are not like you. And it just turned into this, I mean, it's still this big thing. And so I think, oh, that's like one of the things that I really hope that we can fix. Yeah.
No, I hope it's one of the things that we definitely clean up in the 2020s, because it's now, like for me, I do try to avoid political Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like I do, even though part of it is for the job purposes as well, but it is, I don't know, I guess when I first started off with Twitter, I'm like, okay, this will be fun. This will be fun to like talk to other people who like soccer, who like this, who like this kind of music. And now it's just been saturated with a bunch of just politics. And like you said, it would be something if we had constructive debates, constructive talks, like, okay, then I'm cool with that. I can roll with that. but it feels like, and it's from multiple sides. This is not a one party or anything like that. This is from every side. Every political party does this, and it's sad. And I just hope that in this next decade we can clean it up. Not just on social media, even in our own conversations, in our town halls as well, because those are becoming a mess as well.
So just kind of like to lighten it up a little bit here. Another culture thing. This is probably one of my favorite things. The way we watch TV, as a society, the way we used to sit down at a time and watch a show, and you know, you had to wait until next week or next season, and that still exists. Don't get me wrong. That is still a very normal thing. And also to go along with that, you know, now if you do that, sometimes you are watching something with the rest of Twitter and you're like live tweeting and you're talking about it and you're
like
connecting
Game of Thrones.
Yes, exactly. Like big culture moments like that. And you're never alone, because you know, you can watch something by yourself, but you know, hey, if you watch it with Twitter, you're never alone. But I think binging is a term that we didn't have at the beginning of the decade. I don't even know when it started. I don't even know when, like, you know, streaming. I know Netflix was around before the 2010s, I think, because I remember it was the DVD service. Yeah. And I remember going to a friend's house and her having that. And I was just like, what is that? And it was weird.
Put them in the envelope, send them out, and then they'll send you the next one on your list.
That kind of still blows my mind. I wonder if you can actually still do that. I wonder if anyone is actually still doing that.
I think they just barely discontinued that. Like, I think last year or maybe even this year. But I remember hearing something about it that they finally they were going to end their send a CD or excuse me, the DVD.
And so I think maybe 2010 or 2011, I did a seven or I don't know if it was 7 or 30 days. Actually, I did a trial, Netflix trial. And I canceled it because I was like, there's like one thing I want to watch on here. There's like nothing good. Like I don't remember at the time. I honestly couldn't tell you, but I just remember thinking there aren't enough options for me to pay for this. And so I quit after the subscription, and I don't know actually when it was, maybe not even like that long, probably like a year or two is when I was like, okay, fine, I'm paying. And there was a lot more other stuff on there. And the big thing with Netflix was, and the whole binging thing was, that's when they started doing like Orange is the New Black or House of Cards. I want to say Netflix kicked it off. I don't know. But when they dropped an entire season, and that's when binging was born. You didn't have to watch things or wait for things every week or however long you had to wait. You could sit down and watch an entire series of something in a day. Whether you were ashamed or not, you just kind of went with it. And so I think that's like an everyday thing now. It's not such a weird thing. I think everyone, well, I don't know, maybe that's a stretch, but a lot of people have binged something in the last month.
Absolutely. The one thing that I'm interested in seeing in for the 2020s is what is going to happen now with a lot of these other, we call them networks, call them whatever, studios have now isolated themselves. They've taken all of their product, like Disney, and they're in their corner with Disney Plus. Netflix is obviously their thing. You have NBC soon coming out with Peacock. So now it's becoming, to some extent now, even more expensive to get all these together. Cable is kind of dying off. So satellite as well, because they don't offer these things. And so now what I'm interested to see next for the next decade is what's going to happen. Is a company just going to come in together and say, hey, we can do a package deal, or what is going on? Because for a lot of us, I'll just say, I don't feel like I want to pay five different subscription plans.
I definitely don't.
I pay three already right now. I think it's three. See, I don't even remember. I'm trying to barely remember because I know.
Like four.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
Right. And so I'm like, am I going to go to seven at some point? What's going to be the price? And with rent, with everything going up, you know, nationally, I don't know. Like, that's the one thing I hope the next decade we figure out. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the streaming wars, especially this last year, I think the streaming wars have just gotten bigger and bigger. And where it was, you know, you had Netflix and you were set and you were like, cool, maybe you were paying cable on the side. And then Hulu came about. And I think Hulu is what kind of filled my cable subscription, because Hulu is where I could watch shows that are airing right now and I can, you know, watch the day after it airs. But yeah, now you've got your, like, I did sign up for HBO. You've got your other shows. You've got, like you said, NBC is taking their shows off of Hulu and they're doing their own streaming. I don't want to deal with this. And so, yeah, I agree. I hope that we can figure this out, because I'm just not here for it. But I do think it's really cool that completely changed.
Oh, yeah.
And because I'm so excited about that, I hope that doesn't come around and turn into a bad thing. But yeah, that's something that really stood out because it's just, yeah, the way we watch TV has just changed so much. Something else that really changed in TV this past decade was reboots and remakes. It seems like we saw a lot of TV reboots.
A little too much, yes, in my opinion.
I agree. And we also saw a lot of movie remakes, I guess. There was a lot of Disney live action remakes. So whether it was a live action or just like we've seen this before, right. There was a lot of that. And I mean, I know Disney is a big one that I can think of. As far as TV shows, yeah, you've got your Full House or your Fuller House.
Fuller House.
Yeah, I'm sure there were a bunch of other ones that now, for some reason, I'm blanking.
Some are still on the way, too.
Yeah, and I know I mentioned this before in the past, like, I'm done with the reboots. I'm fine without them. I will admit, there are a couple that I'm excited about for the next decade because of the nostalgia, and there's things that I really like, but I'm also okay with them stopping those in general. But it just kind of seemed like, when I talk about how we were really creative this past decade when it came to social media, it seemed like the people at the top of the creative line kind of got a little lazy in the sense that there was a lot of original stuff, but there were also a lot of reboots.
Yeah, and I think part of it also as well is because of the, obviously, which producer, which director doesn't want, you know, deep pockets when it comes to making their movie. And for a lot of these studios, they don't want to invest so much on a movie, on an original story. So what's the safer bet? Let's make a reboot that everybody, from a movie that everybody loved, you know, put in all that $100 million or whatever it is that they want to invest in it, and then they'll make their investment back. So I think for a lot of these directors and producers, they're kind of feeling the pressure of like, check again. So I have to make something that hits a home run, which to me, that's why I've appreciated this past decade more indie films and and just more like foreign films and more of these like smaller budget films that for us who live in the Salt Lake area, we probably see a lot at the Broadway theater. I appreciate those more because they're risk takers. Now, given indie films have always been risk takers, but now more so than ever. We're seeing that because nothing against like Marvel movies or any of those things, but I'm not that big of a fan of those. B, I don't want to see a story that I already know the ending of. Like I still haven't seen The Lion King.
Oh like, yeah, same.
Like I haven't seen that. I have not seen the new Aladdin. Like I know how the same. Story ends.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure there's some special CGI that makes it look awesome or whatever, but I'd rather see something that, okay, it doesn't have the bigger budget. Yeah, they're not using any CGI. They're not using any special technology of it, but it's an original story and I can appreciate that.
Right. And I think just to like kind of sort of defend reboots and remakes, because yes, I'm kind of done with them for the most part, but I do kind of understand them in the sense that it was a nostalgia. Yeah. And I think that this decade also brought a lot of nostalgia for a lot of people, whether it came to like fashion trends or it was things that you saw on TV and on the big screen. A lot of it was just like, I think because of the political divide stuff and how like there was just a lot of stuff going on in our country and in the world that maybe that nostalgia just kind of filled that void and kind of helped you out. Maybe it was a little comfort.
That's a good point.
Like, you know, made you a little more comfortable or just made you remember like, quote unquote, the good old times, right. Or just like, you know, a little more carefree or those carefree moments. So I think if I have to defend them, I would say it's probably the nostalgia factor that even got me into some of the things. I also haven't seen The Lion King or Aladdin, but I do want to see Mulan when it comes out next year, which I think may be a little bit different.
They tweaked it a little bit from the trailer.
Yeah, and that gives it a little bit of a twist. And so, but even then, I think if it was the original story, I'd still want to see it. There's definitely a TV show. I did watch the Full House reboot just for the nostalgia factor. It was definitely really cheesy. But to me, it was that nostalgia. It was that, you know, it was made for people who I think did watch, and I think I watched the reruns at the time the original Full House, the rerun of it, but still it, to me it reminds me of like just growing up, and it reminds me of something that my grandma, who doesn't speak English, that even she enjoyed watching. And so yeah, it's that nostalgia factor, which, you know, I'm not mad at, but I do really hope for some more creativity and some more originality in the next decade. I'm okay with just the reboots that I'm excited for. Right. Obviously, that's really selfish. But after that, please, like, let's get some new stuff up there.
And I think it actually helps also appreciate more the original things. Like,
yeah,
you think about movies. I'm thinking just this year, like The Farewell.
Yes, loved it.
What was last year? The movie from Mexico, Netflix.
Oh, Roma.
Roma. Thank you. Yeah, Roma. Like some of these other ones. And even for me, as I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan, anytime Christopher Nolan comes out with a movie, like, I'm excited about it because I know it's going to be original. He has one coming out next year in 2020, another original movie, and it makes you appreciate more. Okay, this is, yes, the nostalgia movies are there, and that's fine, for to each his own, but it is nice to have those original ones. They've now become, like, almost must-see movies now.
Sort of speaking of originality, but also not, I guess, kind of a segue into this. Something that was really big this decade, viral challenges.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that I guess this kind of goes along with social media. But I mean, you know, people were acting it out in real life. So you've got viral challenges. The big one that I'm sure everyone can remember is the ice bucket challenge.
Yes.
That one I appreciate because it also had a message behind it. It was for a cause and it was cool to see people react to it. But then you also had some really stupid challenges.
What was the Drake one? The get.
Oh, the In My Feelings.
In My Feelings. In My Feelings.
Well, that was a song. I don't know if that, I don't remember if that was what it was called. But yes, I forgot. I actually forgot about that one. That one was dumb. Yeah. No offense. there was also the not the ice bucket. The Tide Pod challenge. Do you remember when kids were eating?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there was that. I did not participate in some of these because they were dumb. Do you remember the mannequin challenge?
Yes, actually, they showed a video. I can't remember what channel it was, but I was flipping, and yeah, they brought that up, and I was like, I forgot completely about that.
I don't even remember what song it was, but it was always the same song. And I remember my old newsroom, we did it for fun. Like we
was that
all
the Beatles song, something like that? Like the something Beatles, Black Beatles? Wasn't that
I don't remember. I got to look it up because if I hear the song, I know for sure it's going to be the Mannequin Challenge song. But yeah, I remember we did that in my old newsroom and I actually remembered it because not too long ago, somebody reshared the video and it was just like, we all acted something out in the newsroom. And then, yeah, it was the song and it was, yeah.
Do you remember the Harlem Shake?
No.
You don't remember the Harlem? That song was like, con los terroristas, and it was just like, yeah, it was big in like 2011, I think
really?
It was.
Oh,
yeah, that one was another one that everybody, like we had newsrooms, you had people everywhere doing like do the Harlem Shake challenge, and everybody would do these videos and people are just dancing.
I wonder if that's how it started out too.
Yeah, that
because
was really
big.
Because
I know Ice Bucket was like 2014, 15.
Yeah.
I think. But again, that one had a cause behind it, so I appreciate a good challenge with the cause. But some of the other ones were, just like the Tide Pod challenge. I think there was also the Cinnamon challenge.
That one was dumb, too.
Yeah, see, people a lot of them, I think, are dumb. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there was a fainting challenge as well. And you know what? I think, thinking back, some of this stuff probably existed when we were in school, you know, when it's like trending in real life, you know, like you see something and everyone is doing it.
Right.
But I think social media now is just what kind of amplified these dumb/not dumb challenges.
Yeah. No, and it's the power of social media as you're alluding to, and just the power of, I guess to an extent, wanting to continue to fit in.
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted to do, whether it was the mannequin challenge or the Harlem Shake or the ice bucket challenge, like some of them had good causes. Some of them were just do it just to do it.
Right. Or just to belong, like to be part of something, to be like, hey, I saw so-and-so's In My Feelings like dance. Now this is my take on it. And I mean, I'm not going to tell you that I thought all of them were dumb. Some of them were funny. Some of them were like really cool. It was like the basic threshold of the challenge. And then you had people like upping their game.
Right.
And, you know, especially because like some celebrities also take part. I remember some of my favorite In My Feelings challenge videos were some celebrities just doing some funny things. And so, you know, you're doing the same things as these celebrities are doing and they're doing. Like, you know, it's like people just kind of feel like they want to belong and you feel like you're a part of something bigger.
You know which one, at least to me, was annoying? The flossing. It wasn't necessarily a challenge, but everybody started flossing. Like everybody on Instagram, like everybody's flossing. Like, stop.
Yeah.
Like that was maybe cool for the first 2 months of it. And now you see like little kids do it everywhere. And they're little kids. It's whatever. But
Yeah. No. Anytime we go to like a basketball game. That's
There's always constantly one kid flossing on the big screen.
Yep. Well, let's hope that there's less of that next decade. This decade is also the one that included, I don't know if you remember, I think this all happened in the same year actually, but there was a lot of, and I think this gets amplified because of social media, so more people get aware of it. But do you remember there was the moment in the Oscars where they announced the wrong movie?
Oh, yeah, that was La La Land, and then it was actually Moonlight, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think La La Land was on stage, the cast of La La Land was on stage, and then it was like, oh, nope, sorry, not you guys. It's actually Moonlight. And also, I don't remember if this is the exact same year or around the same time, but Steve Harvey and Miss Universe, is it?
Yeah, it was Miss Universe.
Yeah, and he announced the wrong winner, so it was just, and I'm sure this stuff happens no matter what.
Right.
But, yeah.
But a lot of things that just went viral and just a lot of things that went crazy because of, you know, mistakes happen, like I get it, but some of them were very, very much more amplified than others. A term that's obviously was not around, and this is, yes, it's going back to social media, but this just tells you how the impact of the social media this past decade has really had. Social media influencer.
Ooh, yes.
Like,
that wasn't a thing.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing in 2010.
Yeah.
But now you can make a living and you can actually make a lot of money in some cases. As a social media influencer,
right.
And as somebody who uses social media every day, but like obviously not just in your personal life, but just for work, just kind of what's your quick thoughts on the idea of social media influencer? Because for me, part of me wants to roll my eyes on it because it's almost like it doesn't have a meaning. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, anybody could be a social media influencer. But there are some people who do a very good job of being a social media influencer and making a living, and more props to them.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show that there's an audience for everything, because, I mean, I think these people are influencers because they have bigger audiences, because I think we all have audiences on social media. But I think what makes you an influencer, or at least what I think that does that, is, yeah, it's the fact that you have a bigger audience and you have people like, I don't know, in the sense that they're kind of like what, your fans, right? So it like kind of puts you at celebrity status but doesn't, but it's also your job. It's kind of confusing. I think there's some really good I kind of feel weird using the word, but yeah, that's what they are. I think there are some good ones out there who have positive messages, or who just, you know, have a good cause, or are just really good at what they do, and they're very creative, and they can come across that way because of the videos that they make, or of the things that they talk about, or of the way that they do things, or just like the way that they connect to people. So I mean, I think that's really cool. I'm not gonna say I like all the social media influencers, and I just hope that, I think not even just social media, but we've talked about influencers before, and then yeah, there's people who have asked to be influencers and people who didn't, but I think as long as they're using their platform for the betterment of all of us in general, I think that I'm totally cool with it. I think that's a cool thing for them to be able to do. I think it even gives like, it shows that, because I think sometimes you think like, oh, well, only people with money, or only people who with status, only those people can achieve big things and influence generation of people. And no, I think so that this just goes to show that anybody with a social media presence can change something and can like create a good group behind them. So, I mean, more power to them, but also, hey, more responsibility to you.
No, absolutely. And also more of, I think there's a lot of, especially for a younger generation, they might think that, oh, I want to grow up and be a social media influencer. But that social media influencer, he or she probably put a lot of work into to get to where they're at. But I think there's a lot of times that we just don't see that. We just see him or her on the screen and just think, oh, they just got famous for saying outrageous stuff, or saying this, or teaching people how to do this. No, they probably worked really hard to get there for most of those.
True. And you don't necessarily have to grow up to become one. You can be one when you're still growing up. Like, you can be young and like super young. You can be still in school, like, you know, getting that done. But also, like, this is your thing. Like, I think it goes to show that there's no age cap on it. So I think that's really cool. It just seems like a thing that really anybody could do if they really wanted to and worked at it. Okay, now my favorite thing. I don't know. It depends. Fashion.
Ah.
The 2010s. Fashion. I mean, fashion is always changing. Yeah. Like technology, it's always evolving. And it's sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad. And sometimes it's a lot of recycling. I think that we did see a lot of recycling this decade. There was stuff that we've seen before and just kind of came back. And that's probably what's just going to happen over and over with fashion. But I want to know, what were some of your favorite or most detested fashion trends? And I can name a few if you, because I don't remember all of them either.
I mean, I'll say as a man, like some of the things that I like and don't like. I do like, I'm a sneakerhead, so I do like the fact that now sneakers are more of the norm. I mean, even if you're going to a party, even a party that's more necessarily a little bit more dressed up, you know, you can go in sneakers. And actually, there's a lot of people, there's CEOs who are going in sneakers,
yeah,
or at least going in like running shoes, you know. Running shoes, like I do love my basketball shoes, but I'm much more comfortable in running shoes. And I like the fact that that's becoming more stylish, is becoming more accepted. And that's where, you know, you see CEOs that are just wearing their running shoes, that are wearing what it's Adidas, Nike, whoever. I like that personally. I do like the fact that the baggy era is done.
Oh yeah, that was more like 2000s.
That was more, right? The 2000s.
Yeah. Like, so 2010s, we tightened up.
Like, yeah, I did like that, just because the baggy ones, it just looked like, looking back at it now, it looked sloppy. You know, it looks sloppy. And who knows, maybe when we do an episode about what the 2020s were like, man, it was like, oh, everybody's all tightened up. Could everybody breathe? But until then, I do like the fact that things have tightened up. And I do also like the fact that now it's become much more fashionable. And now, given, because I do like dressing like this, I like the fact that the whole jeans and just throw on a jacket. You don't have to wear a suit and tie every day. You can just throw on even a T-shirt, but put it underneath a blazer. Wear your jeans and your sneakers, like, that's okay. Like, that scene is kind of like,
yeah, totally acceptable.
Yeah, and yeah, I do like that, because yeah, for personal reasons, but also I just think it's good to dress up. You know, you don't have to dress up to the max. Like, I get it. Nobody needs to be wearing a suit and tie and a 3-piece suit every day, but I do think looks are, as far as fashion, your appearance is not the most important thing, but it's somewhat important. Like, obviously, you're not going to go to an interview dressed, you know, in your PJs like you're flying to the airport. That could be a whole other subject, but I'm not going to get into that. But I do like the fact that more people, at least from the men's perspective, from what I see as a guy, they're taking care of themselves a little bit better, even with like their beards and things like that. So that's what I think. What about you for women?
So I think I really like the athleisure trend. I think that it just shows that we're okay being comfortable now. Now, I'm not saying, like, I think when we talk about athleisure, it doesn't just mean, like, you show up in sweats everywhere. Like, it's not, at least not to me, it's not that. It's just kind of like a trendier, comfortable version. So, I mean, I don't like all of them. I'm not, like, for yoga pants everywhere. But I just like the whole comfort look. Like, it's, like, comfort but with style. Yeah. Because, yeah, you could easily throw on, like, a huge oversized t-shirt and some like huge sweatpants and like some sneakers and like, you know, that's your look. I don't think that's what athleisure is. I think that's like actual sweats. I think athleisure is just like, yeah, sweats, styled sweats, but they're comfortable. And I think that just goes to show we got a lot more comfortable this decade, because I know before, like for women, especially like there was a lot of like, especially like jeans that were very like low rise jeans.
Oh yeah.
Those are not comfortable. Like you can't walk, you can't sit. And so
if you drop your keys, that's good luck there.
Yeah. Oh no. And so there was a lot more high waist situations going on in this decade. There were high waist shorts, high waist jeans, like mom jeans, like, and I think a lot of that is just like comfortable, and it's I think that goes a lot to goes to show that we were very comfortable. We were like ready to get more comfortable. I did like mom jeans. I didn't think I'd ever like them. I thought that was kind of like an 80s kind of 90s thing, and I didn't think that they would ever come back, but I do. They're really comfortable. I like the whole, like, it doesn't have to be super fitted look anymore, which is also why I like athleisure. I think this is kind of like a guy thing, I guess, but like man buns were a big thing.
Yeah.
Like kind of like, I think it was like first it was like for maybe a subset group of like people, but like now, yeah, subset, I guess. But now like really they're just for everybody. And I think that also, again, I think that's in a sense, it's also showing comfort, because it's saying you don't have to cut your hair if you don't want to. Right. You can leave it long and then you can throw it up in a bun. Like, so I was kind of for them. At first I was like, yeah, like, I thought it was like a hipster thing. Now I'm good for anyone with a man bun. Mm. Gray silver hair was a big thing. Like people there were women dyeing their hair, like, you know, like gray, silver, doing the old thing. I think I don't know if they were like all embracing their canas, but like, I think it was just kind of like, hey, like, this is just a different look. And I was kind of for it. Like, I definitely like it on men. Like, I definitely think, like, and I don't think men were dyeing their hair. I think women were dyeing their hair. Well, some women were dyeing their hair to do this. Men, I think, were just like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like it. What I didn't like, what I don't like, this.
Here we go.
So dad shoes are a really big thing right now, and it's kind of like those running new, I don't know, they're not even like New Balance, but they're like, they're really chunky.
But New Balance is a big suspect.
Right, like, but a big, well, also Kanye West, like Yeezy, like.
Those big chunky shoes?
Yeah, the really big chunky ones. Now, look, I am 5'2", and I am all for a heel or like a wedge, or like, I am all for like trying to be a little bit taller, so I get it, but I think, I just don't get them. Like, I don't think they're cute, I don't.
I personally,
like,
I've never,
anybody.
I don't own a pair of dad shoes. I get people wanting to throw back a little bit to like the 90s when there were chunky shoes.
But these these look way chunkier.
No,
like,
these are big.
Chunky, like, 2.0.
Yeah, like these, like those, some of those Kanye ones, like, A, I think they're ugly. That's just my opinion. I'm not a biggest fan of like gray shoes. I just think it looks boring, but that's just my opinion. But yeah, like it became a thing. But, you know, part of it is Kanye. Part of it is, you know, trying to be in the style. Balenciaga has some shoes that are basically huge looking, brick looking shoes.
Yeah, they just don't look comfortable. Yeah. Like, I'm all for wanting to be taller. Like, trust me, I have shoes like that too. But I just don't like the chunky aspect of it. I don't like to dress up, dress down. Like, I don't like it.
And they're not comfortable. I've tried some on, like, at stores, and I'm like,
so what
this looks like a boot. And I don't even own a pair of boots anymore, because I like being comfortable. I only wear sneakers and running shoes.
Like, would they be good for the snow?
No, they probably not. They're probably like, their grip isn't probably even good. I think people just want to be like, and I'm not saying Kanye's like the main like person, but they want to be like Kanye. They want to be like people they see in New York and LA who are wearing the Balenciagas or these chunky shoes. But I don't know. I think, like you said, it goes back to comfort. If you feel comfortable in it, then teach his own.
Yeah.
Teach
like,
his own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Respect to that. Like, I there are certain trends that came, like, even, like, throughout my whole life, certain trends that maybe I didn't like in the beginning, and then eventually they grew on me. I'm trying to think of one now. Mm-hmm. I'll let you know if I do. Mm-hmm. But this one has not grown on me. I just don't get it. Yeah. I refuse to get it. And also, like, you know, there's, like, the chunky socks with it, too. And, like, I like chunky socks, but not with the chunky shoes. There's a lot of chunk. I also don't. Okay, so fanny packs came back, kind of, and I like a fanny pack. I don't like. Well, I like some fanny packs because I think it's convenient. Like, I get it. All right, like, I respect them. But what I don't like is the trend where it was a fanny pack, but it was like thrown over like a crossbody bag. So it was like a fanny pack across your chest.
Oh, like, it's like a satchel.
Yes, it was a satchel, but it was a fanny pack. Yeah. But it was like the new thing was to wear it like a satchel, even though it was a fanny pack. And I was just like, get a satchel, get a crossbody bag. Like,
maybe it's an attempt of Americans trying to look European because Europeans wear a lot of satchels, but I don't know.
Okay, but it was like, I'm all for the satchel. Right. I just don't like the fanny pack as a satchel.
Oh, I think that's fair.
And that's like a thing that I think it's kind of like a thing now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it started last year or the year before. Maybe I'm late, but that's another thing that I'm like, maybe I'll like this later. And I still don't like it. I like the fanny pack. Hmm. I think it's convenient. But I don't like it as a crossbody.
Something that was in this decade as well. How do you feel about, as this happens more with guys are now starting to carry more of a travel bag. Like that's become
like
more
satchel,
of a
satchel kind of?
Yeah, kind of. And then they just carry it around. It almost looks like they're carrying around like gloves or something, but it's like a little, it's kind of like those bags that you do for like just for traveling. But instead of like taking it when you're flying, like guys are now taking it everywhere. So now, because they have their beauty care products, their hair products, or some guys who have long beards, they have their beard products there. So they're basically walking around with a travel bag, like a small kind of.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Now, but they're just walking.
They're just walking around with it because they're carrying their stuff in there, which really wasn't in the 2000s. Like in the 2000s, nobody was carrying around. But now that's become more popular. Part of that also has become popular in the NBA. Like that kind of became really big. Like you would see LeBron carry his like little travel bag. But now more guys are carrying around travel bags. Like, oh, yeah, this is just like my hair care product. This is like my beard.
But they're
product.
Not traveling?
No, they're not traveling. They're
oh,
just
so
going,
it's just like, hey,
yeah, going
to
the
dinner.
Store. Or yeah, or they're going to like dinner. Or they'll go to somebody's house and they just carry their stuff with them. That's become bigger, especially in Los Angeles and New York. I don't know why, but part of me is like, okay, I guess I get it. Like nobody wants to carry a backpack all the time. But I'd rather carry a backpack than carry this little bag that just has my toiletries. That's just my. That's just.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, what's in the bag?
It's just toiletries. It's just that.
Well, okay, because there's my little backpacks. They came back, like backpacks, but like little mini ones, which I liked. I think they're cool. Not like not too little, but
right.
So that's why I'm wondering, like, why not carry a little backpack?
I'd rather just carry a backpack.
So my thing is like, I think that's weird, me personally, Yvette Cruz. Mm. But you know, if that's what makes you happy and you want to carry it around, like good for you, I guess. I have a lot of questions, but no,
it's become a thing. Yeah. But that's fine. But
they just don't want to be like stuck somewhere without this stuff. Yeah, like carrying around a toothbrush in a sense.
And I guess there's some people who are much more in tune with grooming than others. Some could just like, you know, they
and
do
I can
their hair.
That.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I just don't know the idea if I want to carry around all day, or anybody should be carrying around all day, like their hair care products. I get makeup. I get why women carry their makeup. I think that's fine. But I just think, like, do I really want to carry around, if I had a long beard, do I really want to have my beard oil? Because I feel like I need my beard oil, or I'm not going to be the same if I don't.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, are you going to need it? Like, if you need it every time you excuse yourself to use the restroom, like,
some people do.
It makes sense.
Yeah, but.
But because it's like chapstick. Like, I like having my chapstick, but I'm going to use that not in the beginning and the end of the day. Like, I'm going to use it throughout the day.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think grooming, like, that also became a big thing. Like, I think people, I mean, obviously people have always been conscious about that, and there's people who haven't, but I think it just, and again, you know, not to like, I feel like this is just a social media episode, but not to turn it back to that, but I think it's because of, a lot of stuff was just like more skincare routines, I guess beard care, and just kind of, and I think a lot of, also I think that has
even with social media, like you said, and I know we talked about in an earlier episode, those makeup tutorial videos, they're popular on Instagram.
Yep.
But they turn, you know, just without makeup, and they just change it around in like whatever 30 seconds, and you see the process.
Yeah.
Those have become popular.
Ooh, and then this is kind of thing. Okay, so Photoshop has always been a thing, and people have always altered, especially like when you talk about magazines, you've always been able to alter appearances, but filters became a really big thing.
That's true.
Because it was, again, because I think it was you could do it from your phone. You didn't have to go connect to a computer and then, you know, do the Photoshop stuff. Like, you could just filter things up. And there's apps for that, too.
Yeah, now there's apps for it. And now, like, there's some people, I know there's been, like, memes about it. Like, now you don't know who you're seeing, because one person could be like this with the Photoshop or with the filters. Yeah. And then you take out the filters and they look completely different. I don't mind the filters. I think it's fun to an extent. I think it's kind of fun. But if you're living your life through the filter, and I know we had an episode, I think it was entitled The Filtered Life.
Yeah.
Listen to it. I don't think that's just healthy. This is my opinion.
Yeah. And then, because a lot of the people talked about like catfishing and how that was a big thing this year too, because of the filters and because I think the technology behind
TV
that.
Show, popular TV show.
Exactly.
Obviously, this decade.
Yeah, it came from that. And so now it was just the thing that everybody could easily just like catfish each other through your filters or not, or just like with your presence online. Another big thing that changed, and I won't get like too much into it because this is something we're going to talk about, in 2020, something we have in the works. Dating was really has really changed throughout the decade. It used to be more of a in person dating, and then there was online dating. People would meet online, but then came the apps.
Yeah.
And not just one, but two, three, four. There's tons of different apps catered to different people, and that's how people date now. Like they meet,
swipe left or right, or
right,
whatever.
And then just slide into the DM, whatever you got to do, and then that's the norm now.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, like you said, we'll get into it deeper in 2020 when we have our new episodes. But yeah, I have mixed feelings about this topic. I won't get into it as well. But
same for the episode.
Yeah. No, definitely.
But there's no denying that really changed
absolutely
the decade. And
absolutely.
So I'm curious, but also scared for what 2020 or the 2020s. Is that what we're gonna call them? 2020s.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
The 2020s. Yeah.
The 20s. Oh, yeah. The 20s.
Yeah. 20s. Whatever we want to call it. I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that's all my stuff for the decade. I don't know. You have anything to add?
No, I think the only thing that I could think about, I was just looking at some of these things. There are some things that have stayed the same that I am kind of appreciative in the sense of we still have, for example, I'll just go kind of more pop culture, kind of sportsy stuff. LeBron is still playing. So LeBron is there. Leo DiCaprio is still arguably one of the biggest, if not the biggest star still.
And he got his Oscar, didn't he?
Got his Oscar, yeah. He finally got his Oscar. And the decade started with my favorite movie still of the decade, which is Inception. Still my favorite movie of the 2010s. About it which one could it be? I'm like, no, it's definitely this one. It's definitely because of the idea, because it's an original idea. And it's something that even 20 years ago in the 2000s, if you would have said, hey, we're going to do a movie about this, probably would have gotten rejected.
Yeah, and it's still something that people bring up every day. It's an actual topic of that. It stays with you.
What about you? Is there anything that really stands out?
Talking about music, I think one thing that for me really stands out is how Latin music has evolved, in the sense that, I mean, it's always been something for us and something that we can appreciate and we're singing in the car or we're listening to at home or whatever it be, but it's not something that we heard or you had to hear on a certain radio station. It's not something that you heard on mainstream radio. Because it was a genre, it was its own thing. So it was on the, Spanish-speaking radio station. And this decade really brought that out. And I think you've talked about this before, the whole, what did you call it, the Latin fusion, or what was it called?
It was the Latin explosion.
The Latin explosion.
20 years
yes,
ago,
that
actually.
Was, exactly.
1999.
Yeah, and it's kind of it came back in the sense where we have a lot of reggaeton playing on just the mainstream radio station, or you have a lot of collabs between Latin artists and mainstream artists, hip-hop and rap and R&B, and it's just kind of all this collaboration, and it's becoming the norm where people who this was a decade of not just Despacito but a bunch of songs like it, where you have people who don't speak Spanish at all who were singing these songs in Spanish that wouldn't have happened another decade ago. So I thought that was something that really stood out to me, is that it's almost like Latin music went mainstream, and I think that it's cool, got a lot more of the recognition that it deserved.
Yeah, and also now I think about it, in the upcoming Super Bowl in Miami, the headliners are Jennifer Lopez and Shakira, two artists that came out, as far as to the American audience, more as recording artists in 1999, so 20 years ago.
Mm.
So it's just been a full circle of just everything. And yeah, you're right. It's now, Latin music is now not just secluded to the Latin station. Now
right.
You hear it, now you hear it everywhere. And now it's become common. You know who Wisin and Yandel are, or at least you've heard of who Luis Fonsi is or what song he's famous for. And these collaborations that, and it's not just rappers who are collaborating with them. You have R&B artists, collaborating with these Latin artists and, hopefully growing la cultura, hopefully growing our music, because our music goes beyond, what is heard also on the radio stations. Well, that was our last show of 2019. Thank you so much for listening in. Yvette and I have, always enjoyed doing this, and we'll continue on 2020 with many more topics. Thank you so much for listening throughout this year. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell everybody to subscribe. We are on wherever you get your podcast at, everything from Apple to Spotify to iHeartRadio. On social media, we are at KSL Cafecito on Twitter and on Facebook. For me, I am at Joel Cardenas.
And I'm at Evie Cruz.
And we wish you Happy New Year, and we'll see you in 2020.
Ciao.